This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Of course, that was our salute to the late, great Jimi Hendrix. Whether you are a God-fearing Christian or a skeptical agnostic, there's no denying the political power of religious activists, especially among Black Americans. For centuries, Black church leaders have shaped political debates around slavery, civil rights, and who gets to be president. So how are Black communities of faith impacting politics today? Joining me is the Reverend Osagyefu Sekou, a minister at Judson Memorial Church in New York City, and Obri Hendrix, a minister and author of The Politics of Jesus, Rediscovering the True Revolutionary Nature of Jesus' Teachings and How They Have Been Corrupted. Welcome, gentlemen.
Yes, hello.
Greetings.
So, Obri, we have known each other since a writing class we took at the Frederick Douglass Center.
Apparently you learned, and I'm still learning.
It's just nice to catch up with both of you. So, yeah. You know, this month we're looking at a lot of different religious traditions, but when you look at historic moments like the Civil Rights Movement, I want to ask you first, Reverend, did the Black Protestant Church play the strongest role among the faiths?
Well, first, let me just say thank you for engaging in this dialogue. And it's always a pleasure just to be in proximity of Dr. Hendrix, whose work is going to be, has already been stated, going to be an instant classic. The reality is that there are one of the histories of America, small h, if you will, is a history in which prophetic religious beings who have always been a minority, been on the fringes of the Black church tradition, have been able to seize public imagination and at their best transform public policy. So when we look at the tradition of Martin Luther King, we have to note that in 1958, he is put out of the National Baptist Convention with 2,000 other clergymen because of his civil rights activity and has to create the Progressive Baptist Convention. And so within Black Protestantism, there has always been this kind of prophetic remnant that has served to engage in the dismantling of slavery. And then the last prophetic moment that I believe in American history is that which we have seen in the Civil Rights Movement. So it has served us deeply, but has always been small, always been marginal, and has always been courageous.
Obri, the whole idea of a revolutionary is someone who is battling the status quo. But revolutionary, which is in the title of your new book, really comes with this, with this connotation of violence, this connotation of upending people's quiet and peaceful lives, not always in good ways, but also in dramatic ways that may make people uncomfortable. How do you see the civil rights implications of revolution, but also in general the idea that Jesus was a revolutionary?
Well, I use the term revolutionary in the sense of setting the status quo on its head. In the book I explain that I'm not talking about any paramilitary overtones or any kind of physical violence or anything like that. But Jesus was revolutionary in that he advocated, very, very substantial, radical, and upending change in the body politic. The Civil Rights Movement was revolutionary in the sense that it did the same thing in this nation, forced the nation to strive to be more just, to strive to fulfill the promise of its own creeds. But the Civil Rights Movement, as Sekou just said, the Civil Rights Movement represented a relatively small active part of the church, and I think it's something we really have to deal with. This sort of a myth that the Black church, is very political and radical and revolutionary by nature, has played that role historically, and it really has been just some fringe elements. Much of the church, in some instances, has been just the opposite. It's really stood to maintain an unjust status quo, if nothing else, by tacit complicity.
I want to ask both of you, and Reverend Sekou, you can talk first. When you look at the black church, based on what Obery Hendricks just said, you have a strong strain of social conservatism. A lot of black churches get into the political realm, which is what we're talking about, and may advocate for more progressive or liberal candidates based on civil rights, but there is also social conservatism. How do you think those two blend when it comes to how the African-American churches in America insert themselves into public discourse?
Well, I think one of the challenges for us around that question of personal piety, that there is a certain preoccupation within black religious communities around white normative gaze in terms of how will we be viewed by whites. There's a certain level of conservatism around particularly sex and sexuality that has to be wrestled with. And so the reality is that particularly in the nature of sexual discourse and around gay brothers and sisters and a variety of other issues, that conservatism has also been used and exploited by the religious right. The Institute for Democracy Studies has done some critical studies on the way in which homophobia in particular is a way that the Christian Coalition said we will enter into, in 1992, I believe, they have a national meeting. They say we're going to enter into the black church vis-a-vis its homophobia and use that homophobia as a way to begin to pull those churches to the right. So they're using the social conservatism as a political weapon and tool to wedge inside of black communities so that they can swing them more right around the civil rights issues. And so actually the social conservatism is coming to serve in the kind of dismantling of the very civil rights projects that we've struggled to build, develop, and ultimately that have created greater democratic access.
Obery, how does, following up on what the Reverend just said, how does the strain of social conservatism affect or complicate the idea of the black churches in America interacting with the political system?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, who's right? First off, political conservatism sort of flies in the face of the things that Jesus taught. He taught about changing. I mean, he wasn't talking about conserving an unjust status quo. He's talking about changing it. And so it's, to be politically conservative as opposed to being morally conservative really flies in the face of this whole project of trying to struggle to make this, the world a more just one. I think this whole thing of social conservatism, the tragedy of it is that the religious right has been able to conflate moral conservatism and political conservatism. And so it seems like it's the same thing. And so you have people, you have black people supporting conservative religion, conservative policies, because they feel that that's the only Christian thing to do. And the religious rights exploited that very much. And what it really comes down to is that the black church and the black church leaders really have to spend more time in social analysis and looking at how policies affect the interests and the justice interests of the people, and not just try to look at it in terms of personal piety, because they get it all turned around. And because when you really look at it, what Jesus talked about was how people should live and how they should act and the way they should struggle in the world to make sure that the hungry are fed and the naked are clothed. He didn't say to spend a lot of time looking at what people do in their bedrooms. Actually, he didn't say spend any time doing that. He said, we don't judge people on their personal piety. That's between them and God. We judge them. We have to judge them with whether they're trying to love their neighbors as themselves. And so that's really how it's really gotten the church all turned around. And you can go throughout the black church, and that's what you hear. You don't hear much talk about justice. You hear a lot of complaints about what people are doing on their personal time.
And I actually want to make a claim, an essentialist claim, about the black church, given that we've already described that there is a certain mythology that all black churches are these kind of progressive institutions. I want to make an essentialist claim about that and say that is black religion, and that part of what black religion is that it is a left of center project, because it begins with the humanity of black people inside the American empire. And so it begins by saying that we are beautiful, people, we are smart, that we have the capacity to govern ourselves in such a way that we can expand democracy for all human beings. And so I want to make that claim about the Black Church as a left of center project, and that the social conservatism, when manifest into political conservatism, actually flies in the face of a kind of tradition which we hold up and celebrate. While it is on the margins, it has come to be represented at the kind of heart of what we, even though it's a mythology about what we believe about the Black Church.
Gentlemen, let me just reintroduce you to all the folks listening. In case you're just tuning in, this is NPR's News and Notes. I am Farai Chidea. We have with us in this conversation about African-American churches and the political system, Minister Osagyefo Sekou of Judson Memorial Church in New York City, and Obri Hendricks, Professor of Biblical Interpretation at New York Theological Seminary. As we move forward, I just want to get a little bit of information on your own personal walk through faith. Obri, you wrote in your book that you grew up in the church, but you left because the image of Jesus you were taught was meek and passive. Tell us about that moment and tell us what brought you back to faith.
Well, you know, in the politics of Jesus, I really did want to lay myself bare. And in so doing, it, you know, it really became clear to me that having a social conscience, a social consciousness, sort of flew in the face of the things I was being taught in the church. You know, I kept hearing about being meek and mild, leave it to Jesus, and all those kinds of apocalyptic things. I couldn't handle it. I was concerned about the freedom and justice of for Black people, and I didn't see that being talked about. I eventually came back to the church because I realized that, well, that's where, you know, the masses of the people are, and that they just could not be abandoned to some of the false beliefs that they were subjected to and had fallen victim to, and that were keeping, you know, people quietistic and having folks spend all their time in church and not having any guidance on how to go out and change the world around them. And so, I mean, I came back as because I was seized by the image of the and the teachings of Jesus, the revolutionary. And I've struggled to be a follower of his. You know, the church is just a means to an end, but it's really a church should be the site of struggle.
Let me go to Minister Sekou. When first of all, tell us what denomination you're a part of, and secondly, what is Jesus to you? What is your faith to you? What's your walk through faith been?
Well, I am a third generation ordained elder in the Church of God in Christ, a Black Pentecostal denomination, actually the largest African American denomination in the country and the largest Pentecostal denomination in the country. So I got it earnestly. My grandfather and my great grandfather were elders and pastors in this tradition. My faith walk is very similar to Dr. Hendricks in terms of leaving the church for a while, kind of exploring a variety of spiritualities. I believe what called me back is there is a fundamental question that I'm interested in terms of how do people make meaning for themselves in light of circumstances not of their own choosing, and can that meaning making be used to eliminate some misery? And so for me, I hang my faith on Matthew 25:35. Such what you have done unto the least of these, Jesus says, you have done it unto me. So when you don't feed the hungry, when you don't clothe the naked, when you don't visit those in prison, you have offended Jesus. And it's one of the few places in the biblical narrative that Jesus gives penalty for not observing his word. And so for me, I ask that question of all religious traditions. So as a prophetic being, I want to know what the prophetic Muslims have to say about the least of these. What do prophetic Buddhists have to say about the least of these? One of my soulmates is the great Albert Camus, who was an atheist, but much of his writing speaks for the most vulnerable when he says that the artist must never side with those who are the makers of history, but rather those who are the victims of it. And that sounds like Matthew 25:35 to me. And so
Reverend,
Jesus for me is that.
Reverend, you bring up something that is perfect transition. You've got the Nation of Islam, branches of Sunni Islam, Catholicism, Buddhism, all these different faiths and more contributing to the life not only of religion, but also of how people interact with politics. You had the Kennedys and Catholicism. You mm-hmm. had the Nation of Islam and subsequently Malcolm X interacting with the civil rights and Black Panther eras. How do you see today different faiths interacting with these larger structures of American society?
Well, I want to repose your question and in this sense, that the only place that religion has in the public discourse, particularly in terms of public policy, is does it contribute to democratic expansion? It is a claim that I call a religious precedent for democratic expansion, right? And so then one's personal piety, one's certain sets of beliefs around diet and that kind of thing should be respected, accommodated in the marketplace. But in terms of the way the infusion of religion in the public discourse is that it must contribute to the extension of democratic rights. And so I think that that has to be the place and that we have to look at Islam, Christianity, and a variety of other religious traditions inside of America in that term, right? So, for instance, legislation around 14th, 15th Amendment, or even a woman's right to choose, have always been about religious beings being the center of that discourse, expanding democratic opportunity. So black folk, when considered in the Constitution, religious folks organized, said that God wanted us to be free, and as a result, read the Bible in proximity of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. King often said, I want America to be true to what she said on paper. So I think that the test for any religious discourse in the public sphere is, does it contribute to democratic expansion?
Yeah. Obert?
If I may say, first, I mean, I'm also ordained. I'm ordained the AME Church, and actually I sat on the general board of the denomination when I was president of Payne Theological Seminary, the oldest African-American seminary in the country. But, you know, it's one thing that's important to remember is that religions ultimately are not democratic. Mm. They're religion.
Mm.
Now,
mm.
It depends on how we choose to use them and what we choose to hold up. Which is why I think it's important for us to step aside and look, for instance, in Christianity, to look at what Jesus taught and what he did and what he said to follow, for instance, and not the doctrinal things that he taught. But what's also important to get to the larger question is that because religions are not democratic, we have to really look at. Where there's some intersections, but also where there's some real divergences, and more importantly, we have to look at religions to see if they take folk away from the political project, the political liberation and justice project. Now, many of religions.
I'm sorry, we're gonna have to cut you off, and I hate that because we could keep talking for a long time, but. Reverend Sekou and Obert Hendricks, thanks for enlightening us this far.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Obert Hendricks is a professor of biblical interpretation at New York Theological Seminary and the author of The Politics of Jesus, Rediscovering the True Revolutionary Nature of Jesus' Teachings and How They've Been Corrupted. And Reverend Osagyefo Sekou is a minister at Judson Memorial Church in New York City. He joined us from our NPR studios. Thank you.